City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Coleman Domingo.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 363. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Coleman Domingo from the Big Fat Apple.
You are. I'm going to take a big bite out of the apple. You are eating that apple down to the core, brother. What?
There's nothing but seeds, baby. It's nothing but seeds.
Nothing but seeds that plant more apple trees. Yeah. I am telling you, you have been having the biggest career. And, well, let's just start with what... with what is the thing I've been waiting to talk about, which is the Big Gay Sketch Show is back on the air on Logo.
Yeah. Have you been watching?
You know, I've only caught the first episode, so okay. I am behind, I think, one, right? I think mm-hmm. I'm behind one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and my brother is a big fan. You know, he loves the sketch comedy of all, and he thinks the Big Gay Sketch Show is the next In Living Color. Like, he really equates it with how high the standard was on that, which is probably his all-time favorite. But lots of good stuff, a lot of good stuff coming up this season. What made the cut? Who are we going to see you portray and poke fun at this year?
Oh, my God. I think people have been seeing him during RuPaul's Drag Race. They've been mm-hmm. showing my version of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Mm-hmm. With that glow.
Yeah, with that glow where you can barely see my features. I'm spoofing like RuPaul, I'm spoofing like Beyonce, and they showed the one where I spoofed Nick Cannon mm-hmm. and Morgan Freeman and Tyra and who else? I'm basically playing every popular black male and female mm-hmm. in the media.
Yeah. Well now with RuPaul and you're both at Logo, are your paths going to cross? Is Ru going to have an opinion on your?
I'm sure Ru has an opinion, but Ru is, I think, nothing but like so sweet and generous. And I'm sure he's probably getting a big old.
It's so great.
RuPaul's like just laughing his way to the bank. Cause I love the fact that RuPaul's everything. He's becoming Oprah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a new show called Summer School coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It's spoofing all the reality shows and making it so very gay and so very RuPaul and making it actually very original again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to seeing how far RuPaul goes. So anyway, it's an honor to spoof RuPaul. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Who is your favorite to put on?
My favorite to don. Oh, is Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
I'm donning Whoopi this year because Whoopi is just a lot of fun. We're doing a couple of View sketches that are really out of control.
Yeah.
And Kate Cannon, who plays Barbara Walters, is unbelievable. She's really amazing. And you're right. I think the production values, the writing has gotten even stronger. I think as Logo has found its voice, I think. Mm-hmm. I think Logo is truly finding its voice now in terms of like, I think they were sort of floundering around and trying to feel themselves out for a few years, but now they're finding their voice, and also like the Big A Sketch Show. I think we're now really becoming a more seasoned sketch show now.
You know, what's interesting with Logo is it seems that they are less about creating original content based on fictional content and really finding strides with commenting upon mainstream culture. Like, that's what's making it queer.
I think that's exactly it, because that's our queer sensibility as well. Like they have now the programming, the Sarah Silverman Show, as well as like RuPaul's Drag Race, Big A Sketch Show, you name it. But I think that's exactly what they're doing right now. I think that's what they're finding that works. So it can have mass appeal as well. You know what I mean? So it's not just for the gays, but it's for the gays, but also the straights that love the gays, and also the gays that love the straights that love the gays that love the straights.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you've got a lot of straight women watching RuPaul Drag Race, and I think you probably have some straight men watching it too.
We really do. Actually, this kid who was in the show that I just did, this young straight kid, 14 years old, watches RuPaul's Drag Race every week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He loves it.
Yeah. Because it's an insight in, right? It's like an insight into what happens in that whole world that has been kind of the face of the gay community for a while.
You know what? What I think is so cool about RuPaul's Drag Race as well, I think that the fact that they cover some stories and some parts of the story, which are really touching, actually. You're kind of surprised because you think it's all just going to be camp because it's drag. Mm-hmm. But it's actually, you know, I love that RuPaul just takes everything so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you know, it's just like, okay, this is serious, and it's artistic, and it's about humanity as well, and it's also about competition and shining, being your best, being yourself, which is cool, and being true to yourself. And so I think a lot of times his messages in on the show, I think they're just really far-reaching and great, and I look forward to this show just really, really blowing up. I'm counting on, I think he should get an Emmy nomination.
Ah, as best host?
Yeah.
You know what we love, and this is going to lead me to my second... Gosh, probably I should ask 20 questions, but I'll just probably let you talk about it, is that Mitchell Fain, you know, our other lovely co-host on the Queercast, he loves when RuPaul, you know, goes, silence, and
that's
nobody's speaking.
That's my favorite moment.
And nobody's talking.
It's silent already. Nobody's talking.
Silence. Okay, silence. So, okay, Mitchell Fain has got a big old boner for the Wendy Williams and is dying to know... just any kind of dish and dirt you can spread. And are you the next best gay pal of Wendy Williams? And tell us about Wendy.
Okay, get this. I just actually found out today. Okay, this is a little short story. I had a great time, first of all, on the show. It was great. It was fun. She's really friendly. She's warm. Everything about the show, you go in, everyone's very... Seriously, I mean, the walls are painted pink. It's kind of like very gay in a way. I mean, you really go in there and the walls are painted pink and everyone's really sweet to you and kind, and they treat you really well. And they just want – the show is really just having – you're really having a good time for an hour. And Wendy was just really – the funniest thing, I mean, that was shown on tape as well, is that the fact that she called me Johnny. She said, so Johnny, you play all the black characters on the show, and the camera went to Johnny. I was like, I think, did you mean Coleman? That's me. And so it came to me. So it was a little coup, but it was fun. But there's no real dish. The dish is that she's really sweet. And I really felt like she's really genuine. And she's genuinely having a good time. And it really is like you're just coming to her house for an hour, and she's just dishing and talking and having coffee and looking cute and talking to her girlfriends. That's all the show is.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to get too deep about. But and then that evening, I went with my friend Anika Noni Rose was a presenter at the Good Housekeeping 125th anniversary party, and I went with her there. So Anika and I are on the red carpet, and guess who's behind me on the red carpet is Wendy Williams, and I look over and I'm like, hey, Wendy Coleman, and she's, hi, Coleman. How you doing? And I'm like, hey, how you doing? And, you know, I thought, you know, I don't know why you think these things, but I thought she didn't remember me. You know, she sees people on her show every day, whatever. But anyway, the next day, apparently, she said on her show, the people that she saw, what she went to last night. And she said, and my friend Coleman was there.
Aww.
Isn't that nice? You know, so I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah.
I think that shows how genuine she is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's what Mitchell loves and would want me to say, and what he has said on our show is that he feels like there's nothing really false about her.
No, there really isn't. And the false things are the things that she talks about. She's like, right. Yeah, I got fake boobs, I got fake hair. That she's so real about everything. And she's a really tall woman. She's tall.
She represents kind of the gay community and the trans community, which is what I really like. I mean, come on. I mean, RuPaul and Wendy Williams may have a boxing match to.
Oh my God, okay. Yeah. Don't they have one of those cartoons like celebrity boxing, celebrity death match or something like that?
Maybe that should be next on Logo.
Totally.
We should pitch that idea to Logo. Celebrity death match on Logo. First up, RuPaul and Wendy Williams. I would pay pay-per-view to watch that shit.
Who would you put your money on? Who would win?
I don't know, because you can't ever fuck with like a really tall, big drag queen who's like been through the gay ghetto. But I don't know, Wendy Williams, I might have to put some money on her.
I think Wendy Williams may have a razor under her tongue.
Here's what I can tell you. Wendy Williams has the hips and the thighs. And so RuPaul's got some skinny little hips and thighs. So I would probably, I think that's where all the power comes from. Especially if they were like Indian leg wrestling. I would give it to Wendy in a snap. The woman born woman's going to win that one. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So what else have you been doing? You've been doing a show.
Yeah, I've been doing the last musical that was written by Candor and Ebb, directed by Susan Stroman, that the gays know from, you know, Young Frankenstein and the producers. And it's a show called The Scottsboro Boys. Mm-hmm. And it's about the infamous Scottsboro Boys case in 1931, where 9 African-American teenagers were accused of raping 2 white prostitutes. And they were found guilty. These white prostitutes were lying. And one of them even confessed that she was lying, but they were still found guilty. So it's about the justice system. And it's a musical, the way, you know, Candor and Ebb handles it with irony, with humor and wit. And it's all in the lyrics and in the music, and it's beautiful. And it received glowing, phenomenal reviews. And it was just announced that we're going to take the production to the Guthrie Theater. Late this summer, and then move it into a Broadway house in the fall.
So you're going to be close to us in Chicago, just a little day tripper up to Minneapolis.
Exactly, yeah. I was actually just out near Chicago, apparently. You know, I never know where the hell I am.
Yeah.
I went out to Madison, Wisconsin.
Yes.
I didn't know that was close. Oh, my God.
3 hours.
It's hot and sexy. I love Madison.
Madison's very queer, very collegiate and very queer.
Yeah. I went out there to do a Boy and a Soul for one night at the university.
Nice. Yeah, so that was nice. We got to get you here to do that. You know, well, that's fantastic. So we need to link up that show's website so people can see it in New York, at the Guthrie in Minneapolis, and find out what the status on that is. Well, listen, there is a fantastic, fantastic show coming to Chicago that Coleman's familiar with. The performer's name is E. Patrick Johnson. He is an amazing professor at Northwestern University, but don't let that fool you that he's not also a performer. He has spent some time talking with gay black men of the South. And he wrote a book called Sweet Tea. And so now the book is coming to life on stage with him performing and portraying seamlessly all of these characters that he interviewed throughout his years of talking to black gay men in the southern states. And so it's coming here to Chicago. It's a part of the About Face Theater season, the last show of our season. And I'll be talking with E. Patrick Johnson later on in the show. Plus, we've got a lot going on in the news and what's going on in the theater scene in the Chicago area. And then more with Coleman when we return.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great-tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Huh. Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News.
In Washington, D.C., members of the pro-GLBT group Get Equal disrupted a committee hearing on Capitol Hill to demand that the Employment Non-Discrimination Act be sent to the House floor for a vote immediately. The organization has been quite active on the activist front, organizing protests at the White House, where Lieutenant Dan Choi and other GLBT vets had handcuffed themselves to the White House gates to remind President Obama of his promise to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Jim Lobianco, an openly gay man who was deputy commissioner at the Office of Homeless Services for the city of Chicago, has left his post after having an accident while reportedly driving drunk. Lobianco was charged with driving under the influence and failure to reduce his speed after hitting a car in the Lakeview neighborhood. No one was injured. Lobianco resigned on April 16th.
Service Members United, the nation's largest organization of gay and lesbian troops and veterans, has announced that the total official number of Don't Ask, Don't Tell discharges for 2009 is 443. The number combines the total number of discharges reported by the Department of Defense at 428 with the total number of discharges reported by the Department of Homeland Security for the Coast Guard at 15. This latest figure brings the official 17-year total to 13,425 Don't Ask, Don't Tell related discharges.
In what may be a legal first, a national gay legal group has filed suit against a national gay sports group for sexual orientation-based discrimination against straight and bisexuals. The lawsuit, filed in a federal district court, alleges that the North American Gay Amateur Athletic Association is violating Washington state law against sexual orientation discrimination by imposing a rule that teams participating in the 2008 Gay Softball World Series could have no more than two heterosexuals per team. The three plaintiffs in the lawsuit are all bisexual.
The Point Foundation, which gives scholarships to LGBT students, has announced that its annual gala broke all of the organization's fundraising records. The event raised more than $600,000 in sponsorships, live auction proceeds, and ticket sales.
In Kentucky, state authorities arrested 18-year-old Ashley Sams and Corinne Schwab, as well as an unnamed 17-year-old, charging them with the kidnapping and attempted murder of lesbian classmate Cheyenne Williams. The trio allegedly took Williams to Flatlick Falls and tried to push her off a cliff. School officials said that the four individuals were friends. So far, no motive has been uncovered.
In North Carolina, Duke University junior Justin Robinette has said that he was impeached from the school's College Republicans Club because of his sexuality. However, the official impeachment article stated that Robinette was ousted because of conduct unbecoming of a person in a position of leadership, his refusal to call club meetings, and other charges.
A trans woman who is a former brother-in-law of Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell spoke at a gay rights rally held April 21st at the state capitol. Robin Dean was once wedded to one of Virginia First Lady Maureen McDonnell's sisters. The couple split in 1999. Pro-GLBT activists rallied to urge legislators to outlaw sexual orientation-based discrimination in the state workforce.
In Ohio, two Miami University students claim that they were attacked because they participated in a drag show. However, police officers take issue with the claim that it was a hate crime, saying that the victims followed the other man out of a bar while they all argued and that the victims possibly started the altercation. A protest in support of the victims was slated to take place on Miami's Oxford, Ohio campus.
In Pennsylvania, State Rep. Babette Josephs has accused her primary opponent, Greg Cavitz, of faking his bisexuality in order to snare GLBT votes. At a fundraiser, Josephs said, "I outed him as a straight person, but Cavitz has said that he finds men and women sexually attractive and is offended by Josephs' remark."
Gay rights activists are upset over a blog post by ex-George W. Bush aide Ben Dominic that attacks U.S. Senator General Elena Kagan, who might be chosen to replace Justice John Paul Stevens on the U.S. Supreme Court. He wrote that selecting Kagan would please much of Obama's base, the first openly gay justice. A White House spokesman has denied that Kagan is lesbian.
In world news, In China, a popular bar singer, Zhao Yuping, allegedly posted personal ads looking for people to play S&M sex games with him, and then went on to kill six men while at least two others escaped. Zhao reportedly killed his first victim last October after discovering the man was HIV positive.
In Canada, plans for a multi-million-dollar HIV research facility were scrapped because it simply was not needed. A recent study showed that there was already plenty of storage space for HIV vaccines. The $88 million lab was to be a part of the Canadian HIV Vaccine Initiative, a joint venture involving Canada and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
In England, the Foreign Office, the Department for International Development, and the Borders Agency plan to stop a member of Uganda's parliament from entering the country if the African country's anti-homosexual measure passes. The agencies plan to block MP David Bahati's travel visa if the bill, which punishes gay sex with imprisonment or execution, passes. The legislation has stalled and may not be voted on until next year.
In Jamaica, gay rights activists recently held their first public pride event, a huge step in a country where openly gay individuals have been attacked and even killed. The Walk for Tolerance attracted a crowd of almost 100 people.
Bolivian President Evo Morales told climate change conference attendees that eating chicken can make men gay. Morales said, "The chicken we eat is loaded with female hormones, so when men eat it, they tend to deviate from their manhood," adding that he only consumes chicken that is not genetically modified. Gay rights activists called the statement an absurdity.
In India, actress, gay rights advocate Selena Jaitley spoke at the gay film festival Kashish. During Kashish, which took place in Mumbai, more than 100 LGBT-themed films were shown.
In entertainment news, Adam Lambert, the cast of Glee, Johnny Weir, Sofia Vergara, Eric Dane, Chaz Bono, George Takei, Candace Kane, Wilson Cruz, RuPaul, and New Orleans Saints linebacker Scott Fujita were among the celebrities who joined the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation as it honored Drew Barrymore, Wanda Sykes, and the best in film, television, and journalism at the 21st annual GLAAD Media Awards in Los Angeles. Iron Chef America's Kat Cora presented the Vanguard Award to Barrymore, while Mississippi teen Constance McMillan presented the Stephen F. Kolzak Award to Sykes.
Friends actress Lisa Kudrow and Sex and the City actor David Eigenberg will participate in a 25th anniversary reading of Larry Kramer's influential work, The Normal Heart. The play deals with the early years of the AIDS epidemic in New York and the mostly silent reaction that took place in the U.S. The reading will take place May 17th at Los Angeles Geffen Playhouse.
Dan Parent, the artist slash writer behind the Archie comics, has said that a gay student will enroll at Riverdale High School. The comic is aiming to be more diverse and that the new character, a burgeoning journalist named Kevin Keller, will possibly appear in Veronica Comics number 202 in September. In an issue entitled, "Isn't It Bromantic?" Veronica will become interested in Kevin but doesn't understand why her feelings are not returned.
Openly gay actor Alan Cumming has dropped out of the upcoming Broadway musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Cumming, who was to play the villainous Green Goblin, has departed because of a scheduling conflict as his role on the TV show The Good Wife has expanded. The long-delayed production was slated to start performances in February, but they were postponed because of money-raising problems for the $50 million musical.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com.
You want to learn to play tennis in no time? Chicago's Midtown Tennis Club has the country's only patented tennis teaching program to turn beginners into players in just 3 short weeks, with sessions beginning May 1st. During Tennis in No Time, participants will learn the basics, including the forehand, backhand, and serve in a fun group atmosphere. Best of all, Tennis in No Time is affordable, even in today's economic climate. Enrollment costs $115 and includes a 3-week membership to the Midtown Tennis Club, 2 social parties, and 9 hours of instruction from the country's best pros for only $115. That's less than $20 for each hour and a half lesson. Midtown Tennis Club is located in the heart of Chicago's Lincoln Park at 2020 West Fullerton Avenue. For more information on Tennis in No Time, visit midtown.com/Chicago.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of April 26th, 2010, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Remy Bumpo Theater presents Christopher Hampton's seductive drama Les Liaisons Dangereuses, playing through this weekend, May 2nd, at the Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. A critical hit. For more information, visit remybumpo.org.
Don't miss the Drama Desk Award-winning Celebrity Autobiography, the show where comedians perform the unintentionally hilarious actual biographies written by celebrities. Friday, April 30th and Saturday, May 1st at the Royal George Theater, featuring Mario Cantone, Andrea Martin, Harold Ramis, and more. Use the code LAUGH at Ticketmaster.com for $25 seats.
Jane M. Sachs, the Ellen Stone Bellick Institute for the Study of Women and Gender and About Face Theater present Sweet Tea, Black Gay Men of the South. Dynamic author-performer E. Patrick Johnson inhabits the interviewees from his acclaimed book about Black gay Southern life. Sweet Tea is running now through May 29th at the Viaduct Theater, 3111 Northwestern Avenue. Visit viaducttheater.com for tickets.
Direct from Russia, international music sensation all-male vocal group Turetsky Choir presents a thrilling full-scale production, Forever Music, at Airy Crown Theater in Chicago on Sunday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. An exciting mix of classical, opera, Broadway, Jewish, and pop music favorites in 10 different languages. Tickets available at the box office or online at Ticketmaster.com.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com.
Chicago Opera Theater's 2010 spring season continues with Cavalli's Jason at the Harris Theater in Millennium Park. Four stars, raves the Tribune. Highly recommended, says the Sun-Times. This hilarious opera retells the story of Jason and the Argonauts with a James Bond twist. Only three performances remain through this Sunday, May 2nd. This is opera like you have never seen before. This is opera less ordinary. This is Chicago Opera Theater. For tickets, go to chicagooperatheater.org.
Get ready for a night you'll never forget. The Joffrey Ballet proudly presents Eclectica, the cutting edge of dance. Experience two world premieres and a Joffrey classic all in one spectacular show. Tickets for this Joffrey exclusive start at just $25. Running now through May 29th at the Auditorium Theater. Visit joffrey.org today.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hey, this is Cindy Lauper. Big shout out to Windy City Clearcast.
This groove is for my girls, little lady boys and girls. This groove is for my girls, little lady boys and girls. And all it. Some girls talk to the boys in the chat room. My girls talk to the boys in the back room. Hit me up, I'm that chick. You know that my world won't stop if you clock me. You got me. Oh.
E. Patrick Johnson is a professor and chair in the Department of Performance Studies and professor in the Department of African American Studies at Northwestern University. He is widely published in the areas of race, class, gender, and performance. You may know his first book, Appropriating Blackness, Performance and the Politics of Authenticity, which won several awards. Or you might know him as a performance artist with his show Strange Fruit, which toured around the country between 99 and 2004. But he is back performing a new show here in Chicago. You're going to have an opportunity to see it, and he's performing elsewhere as well. But he will be performing his new solo show, Sweet Tea, which is based on his book of the same name, Sweet Tea, Black Gay Men of the South and Oral History. And this will be the last show in About Face Theater's season. And as a Southerner and as a gay, not a gay man and not a gay black man, but I feel like there's going to be something for me in this show, and something that we all can relate to. So I'm very much looking forward to it and excited to have E. Patrick on the show. Hey, E. Patrick, how are you?
Hi, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, I always say that I have to wear two hats. I kind of have my logical career corporate hat, and I have my artistic expressive hat, and you as well get to kind of be the writer, professor, academic, and also get to wear the hat of being an artist and trumping the boards every now and again. Do you wear both of those hats with equal joy and comfortability?
Yeah, I do. I actually find that my artistic work feeds my academic work, and my academic work feeds my artistic work. And many times when something, an idea doesn't come in the form that I want it to, for instance, Strange Fruit, for instance, originally came to me as an essay. It was going to be an essay that I published about race and gender and sexuality and regionalism. And when I sat down to write it, it just wasn't coming in that form. Hmm. And then literally in the middle of the night, I woke up and wrote the show, Strange Fruit. So it became, you know, this one-person show.
Where are you from?
I'm from a little town in North Carolina called Hickory.
Oh, yeah.
It's known for furniture.
I was about to say, my family makes furniture, so I know exactly where Hickory is. And did you come out in that community?
No, I didn't. You know, coming up, I always joke by saying everybody knew I was gay except me.
Yeah.
You know how that goes. I was very effeminate as a child and had a soprano singing voice, which I used quite a bit in the choir. Mm-hmm. And I was a portly kid and had this big butt. So I, you know, got teased a lot about that. But the way I got people to like me was by imitating people.
Mm.
Especially my teachers. You know, when they left the room, I would get up and imitate them. And so that's how I got my classmates to like me, because I, you know, would get teased for, you know, being, you know, a sissy or that, or having a very high voice. And so that sort of parlayed its way into me acting. I was in a lot of high school plays, and then when I got to college, I was a drama major, but only for a year, because at UNC Chapel Hill, they had a repertory company, and so they didn't really cast undergraduates into their plays. And so I found my way to what was then called the Department of Speech Communication, which then had what was called Performance Studies. And it just opened up this whole other world to me. It was mostly performance of literature.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was in a show about Southern cotton mill workers called Like a Family that toured to those cotton mill communities. And that's where I, you know, really, it was in undergrad where I really got exposed to performance studies and got exposed to ethnography and oral histories, and really developed my craft as a performer.
Mm. Well, there is such a rich tradition in the South of oral history, storytelling, and also in the African-American community. I mean, as I always knew growing up as a Southern kid, you know, there was a big you know, it was just a big, a great amount of mostly women that would come in and story mm-hmm. tell to me from a very young age in schools as kind mm-hmm. of an art form. But also, you know, in knowing a little bit about the history, oral history and storytelling in the African-American community was, you know, before the African-American community could write often right. in the South, they were telling their stories.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, is that a part of tradition and history of the African-American community that you've tried to now tell stories of this time in an oral history way of collecting and gathering stories?
Yeah, and it's actually one of the reasons why I wanted to turn the book into a performance.
Mm-hmm.
The way I came to this project was listening to older men talk about their stories of growing up black and gay in the South. And
were you doing that for a paper, or was that just you just found yourself around some older gay black men?
I was in Washington, D.C., and mm-hmm. I was at a cookout being sponsored by this black HIV/AIDS mm-hmm. outreach group, and just seated not too far from me were a group of old-timers
uh-huh.
sitting around telling lies and you know, spinning stories about, you know, back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And I was just really captivated by their stories because mm. I didn't have, growing up, there were no models for how to be gay or what it meant to be gay for me, especially mm. from, you know, an older generation.
Mm.
So to hear these stories about these house parties and clubs and all of this vibrant black gay community, and this would have been, you know, in the 40s and 50s, I was just really amazed and you sort of like hanging on to their every word. And it was at that moment that I knew that at some point I would go back and collect these stories because we needed an archive.
Mm.
And it took me, that was around 95, 96, and I didn't start collecting these oral histories until 2004, so it took me a minute to mm. do it. But once I started collecting the oral histories and meeting so many great storytellers, I knew then that these stories couldn't just exist on the page,
mm-hmm.
that they had to be heard. And I also knew that, you know, I couldn't tote them all around with me to tell their stories. So I decided that I would create a performance. But what I didn't know at the moment when I made that decision was whether or not I would cast several people doing this story, you know,
mm-hmm.
Performing the stories, or if I would do it. And so this goes back to your first question about me wearing many hats, you know, the academic hat versus the artist hat.
Mm-hmm.
The way I put together the first version of this show, because, you know, the play is different from the more like stage reading that I've been touring around the country called Pouring Tea.
Right.
I decided that I wanted, this would be kind of an intellectual experiment about what it meant to stage these ethnographic encounters in an aesthetic way.
Mm-hmm.
That is, remove them, take them from the living room to the stage,
mm-hmm.
and what were the ethical questions around that?
Mm-hmm.
What did it mean for me to perform these men's narrative in their absence? And so I spent a lot of time thinking about how to shape that show.
Mm-hmm.
So in that version of the show, I play clips of the original interview.
Oh, wow.
So before you hear me perform the men, you hear them speaking in their own voice.
Mm.
And that was on purpose. And then I perform them, trying to match their voices as close as possible. So a lot of my academic training in performance ethnography went into creating that version of the show. And I really was focused on the story, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't really embody the men in that version. It's about making the audience listen to the story.
Mm-hmm. Which is truly that great storytelling type of, that's the structure of great storytelling for storytellers. But now you're taking it to a whole different level.
Yes.
With this true staging of these characters. Now, I mean, obviously, there's a tradition of doing this with Anna Deavere Smith, Mark Wolfe, mm-hmm. of people who truly are collectors of people's language and the various demographics of even a certain group around a particular subject. Let's talk a little bit about just some of the logistics. How did you locate your subjects?
I started out actually with friends of mine in North Carolina in the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area and in Atlanta. And it was literally snowball effect.
Mm.
They would tell somebody, would tell somebody, would tell somebody, would tell somebody. So I was never more than one person or two people removed from the person that I was interviewing.
Yeah.
Even though I was meeting some of these, well, most of these people for the first time.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting an interview with someone from every state of the Confederacy.
We might need to clarify what that actually is, E. Patrick, to all our Yankee listeners who don't know what that is.
Well, there is a line called the Mason-Dixon line that starts right above Maryland and runs across to Oklahoma.
Yep.
Anything below that was considered the Confederacy.
Yep.
They were slaveholding states. And so yep. I have a representative from every one of those states.
Now, where I'm from, we would say Texas does not belong in that Confederacy. But
Well, they had slaves. In fact, they were the last ones to hear that they were emancipated.
That's true, I'm sure. The same holds true today for that state very often. They are the last to hear.
Right.
What is the range of age and social status, background? I mean, just give me kind of a snapshot of the diversity of voice.
The youngest man I interviewed was 19, who was a student at the University of Alabama, and the oldest person I interviewed was 93, the Countess Vivian, who is 97 now, still alive.
Wow.
And I just had a reunion with him this past September, because I interviewed him in 2005. Before Katrina, and then after Katrina, I wasn't able to get in contact with him. But I'll come back to that story later, but I was able to have a reunion with him, and he turned 97 in November. It's a fascinating story, and he plays a key role in the play as well.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of other background, a number of men I interviewed are from small towns, like really small towns, from populations as small as 600 to, more metropolitan cities like Atlanta or Dallas or Charlotte, the D.C. area. Many of them went to college. Many of them didn't. A few of them were self-identified as HIV positive, and that's a theme in the play as well, dealing with HIV/AIDS. Some of them were working class. There was one man I interviewed who is a functional illiterate. So there's a real broad range of ages. You know, there's a 70-year history between you know, Countess Vivian, for instance, and the youngest men I interviewed.
Right.
And varying class and socioeconomic background and education level. So there's a little bit of everybody in there. There's also a couple of transgendered people, one of whom is in the, actually two of whom are in the play. One is a pre-op M to F named Chaz. The other one is a sort of questioning transgendered person named RDNO, who is quite a character on a number of different levels. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of different kinds of folks in there.
What is the relationship of the church, and how did that impact your story? Because you can't talk about the South without talking about the church. You kind of can't talk about the African-American community without talking about the church. Sometimes the gay community is about the only place I think we can't talk about church.
Right.
But I would imagine that faith, spirituality, the church factored into many stories and lives.
Not just many, all.
Wow.
It was a theme that ran through all of the narratives, even for those men who described themselves as atheists, of which there were a couple.
Yeah.
But at some point, you know, they had been, you know, Baptist, Methodist. I mean, in fact, one person described himself as a recovering Baptist.
Right.
So religion played a really, really big role in all of the men's lives. And some of them came out okay on the other side of that. Some of them didn't. Some of them are still struggling with that question of how to reconcile their spirituality with their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are still very much involved in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And still believe that it is a place where they can thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Others eschew religion, feel that it's a place where, you know, they just get bashed.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those perspectives are represented in the play as well.
Yeah.
One of the men that I'm performing in the show, for instance, Jerome, it's a kind of schizophrenic narrative. On the one hand, he says that God's going to take his gayness away.
Mm-hmm.
If he just prays hard enough, that God's going to take it away, and he believes that it is, you know, wrong, that, you know, that God made men to be with women, not each other. But in this very same narrative, he gets on a soapbox about how he's really disappointed in churches and how, because they gay bash,
mm-hmm.
and how they need to stop beating up on gay people in churches.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all in the same narrative. So you have people who are, you know, really conflicted,
yeah,
about it. And everybody talks about church.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine, I mean, well, it's funny because if you go back and listen to this interview at the very beginning, when I asked you about growing up, you said I sang in a church choir soprano. You know, it's like there's kind of, I think as Southerners, we're almost all baptized by church. That doesn't mm-hmm. mean in the literal sense. It just means it is in the air you breathe. It is, it is a part of the ebb and flow of Southern life, or it has been for,
it is,
you know, and it, I guess it still continues to be.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the title. I believe there's probably some double entendre around it.
Just a little.
But I mean, I love a good glass of sweet tea, and we can all talk about how we make simple syrup. But but tell me about the title and how that came to you and what that evokes from the stories that you gathered.
Well, there's so many things that title is riffing off of. One is, you know, sweet iced tea is a staple drink of the South.
Right.
I refer to it as diabetes in a glass, at least if it's made right. And so I grew up on sweet tea, and one of the things I did was collect sweet tea recipes from all the men that I interviewed. Unfortunately, they didn't make the book, but the publisher put it up on the website. So that's one thing. But the other, one of the other things is tea means gossip in the Black gay community. So people say, what's the tea? Spill the tea? Pour the tea? So I'm riffing on that. And then all the other sexual things that come along with tea, like tea bagging, although, you know, the right has appropriated it and turned into something ugly.
Yes.
But, you know, tea room trade, there's a tea dance in gay bars on Sunday afternoons. So all of those things. But then also sweet, and how, you know, everything in the South is explained through euphemism rather than in a direct way. So if someone has a little sugar in his blood or sugar in his tank, that's a euphemism for being gay.
Right.
But then there's also a historical connection to sugar and the African-American slave trade, because in places like Haiti and other places in the Caribbean, in the slave trade, Africans were what they call seasoned in the Caribbean, and they were in the sugarcane fields,
right?
Harvesting sugarcane. And then there's a whole connection to the importation of sugar and tea from China that was also connected to the slave trade. So it's riffing off of all of those things.
All that and more. It's and such more, an all-encompassing title. And yet, exactly what it is, you know. What?
Right.
So you are in preparations for this. I'm assuming you're working with somebody you trust to kind of be your other set of eyes. Always difficult when if you've written something and it's solo work. Talk to me about your director and who's kind of on this journey with you, bringing it to the stage.
The director is a man by the name of Daniel Alexander Jones, and he's based in New York, and he teaches theater at Fordham University, and before that he was at UT Austin, and he's directed quite a few things and written some plays himself, and including a play called The Book of Daniel, which I just love. He works from a jazz aesthetic, meaning that he is into improvisation and riffing. For instance, in the rehearsal process, in the middle of me performing one of the narratives, he might say, riff. And what he means by that is he wants me to break out of the narrative and just talk about what's on my mind at that particular moment. And then he'll say, okay, go back. And so he's also into notions of spirituality and cosmology and energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, during the first rehearsal, he didn't come in with an agenda and say, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. He said, okay, to start performing.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I'd go for a while, he would stop me and say, okay, this is what this character is trying to say. This is the energy I'm feeling for him, so let's pursue this. And it was a different way of working for me, but so productive and so rewarding. I had so many breakthroughs and meltdowns.
How exciting.
During our first week of rehearsals, which were actually in New York. They weren't here in Chicago. They were in New York last week. And he has just been amazing, and I trust him implicitly. He's gentle but very commanding. And I just love working with him.
Exciting. It sounds like he's really, you know these characters, and I know that when you're portraying somebody who's a real person, you know, that you want to bring that level of respect and really get it right, you know, like get it right who these people are. And what's really neat about how you describe his process with you is that, yes, he holds up that mirror and says, this is what's being reflected. Is that accurate? And at the same time seems to be shaking you up a little bit to free you.
Yes.
To put yourself in it as well, because you're the vessel.
Yeah, and that has been so key. You hit the nail on the head. He's tapped in to freeing me up because, you know, I've been performing this for a while, and but as a stage reading,
right?
You know, but it's very different to fully embody them.
Yeah,
and so they use my body in different ways. So I'm discovering things about my body in performance that, you know, I didn't know was there, and it is releasing a certain kind of energy.
Do you think anybody can relate to these men? Anybody can relate to these stories that might show up at the to see this About Face theater presented production?
I think that anybody can relate to these stories because these are human stories. Yes, they're coming specifically from Black gay men who were born and raised and continue to live in the South, but their stories are human stories about family dramas, about struggling to find who you are in the world, relationships. You know, these are stories that we all have to deal with no matter what our race, sexuality, gender is. They're stories that people can relate to. I mean, one of the things that continues to amaze me is when I get someone who isn't Black gay from the South, like this 75-year-old white grandmother who said to me after I did the show in North Carolina, she wrote to me in an email, she said, I'm a 75-year-old white grandmother of four, and I just want to say how moved I was by these stories and how brave you are for bringing them to light and how touched I am by how I saw myself in these men, even though I don't share their identity.
Mm-hmm.
So those kinds of emails and those kinds of responses let me know that, you know, I am tapping into I don't want to use the word universal because I think there's something specific about these stories, but in that specificity, we get to the humanity of the men.
Yeah, and it's the human experience. You know, we get closer to a human experience we think we are separate from. And to me, that's the great thing of theater in general, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Sweet Tea, which I I'm going to be at opening night. No pressure, E. Patrick. Sweet Tea runs April 29th through May 29th. Easy to remember. Maybe, I don't know, can you extend? I think if we all rush and get tickets, maybe it would go on longer. Great great lead-in to Gay Pride Month right around the corner.
Yes.
It's all
and IML.
And IML. There you go. Actually, it's in the middle of IML. You'll probably get some of the... I hope so too. So all you leather daddies listening, put that down on your book while you're here as something to do while you're in our fair city. But April 29th through May 29th at the Viaduct Theater, which is 3111 Northwestern. It's a great space, great theaters, nice little bar out there, very kicky, casual. I love that space. Shows are Wednesday through Saturday at 7:30. Saturday and Sunday, there will also be matinees at 3. And if you want tickets and you can get to the Chicago area or you are in the Chicago area, this is a don't miss production. Visit aboutfacetheater.com for information and tickets. And if you want to know more about E. Patrick, you can go to his website, epatrickjohnson.com, where you can find out about his books. The book is for purchase, even if you can't get here to Chicago to see the show. You can definitely find out where other appearances E. Patrick will be making. All of that will be linked, the About Face Theater and E. Patrick's personal website, in our show notes. E. Patrick, break a leg.
Thank you.
I look forward to meeting you, and maybe we should share some cloudy sweet tea together.
Yes, in a mason jar.
In a mason jar, in a ball jar. Let's just say it, make it the sexual pun that we want, in a ball jar.
Yeah.
All right, E. Patrick, thank you so much, and we'll see you at the show.
All right, bye-bye.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. So, Coleman, you've had the opportunity to see Sweet Tea?
I sure did. Oh, my God. He came out here and did a presentation of it. I think it was about 9 months ago at City College.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautiful. It was basically just E. Patrick Johnson and a chair mm-hmm. and a microphone. Mm-hmm. And he transformed. And the stories they were telling, they were so beautiful and so incredible. And it really just... you know, it's just really about, it's about us, and it's about our history and about who we are and how we deal with our sexuality in different parts of the South, which is very interesting. And he really talks to like some old school, like some guys. I think he had some people he talked to who were like 80 years old or 50. So, you know, it's really, I think it's really cool. And I think it's really cool for maybe, you know, for young gay folks to take a look at, take a look at his book and also go see his performance. Yeah.
Well, and I'm sure you have so much respect for the form of being a solo performer on stage. And I think that this has been a real journey for him, because I think the show that you saw, he has now even more elevated because he's worked with this director the past few months on really taking it to the next level. But you just mentioned earlier in the show, going and doing your show, A Boy with Soul, up in Madison. What are the challenges of exposing yourself so much as a gay person, all that fragility and vulnerability, and just really laying yourself bare on stage by yourself?
You know, I think it's absolutely necessary. I think it's actually necessary and beautiful to give so much of yourself in order for people to see themselves. Truly, I think that's the only way that people can really open and strip down and open up honestly. And I think especially, and I think with both forms, with my play and also with E. Patrick Johnson's play, I don't think that they're not therapy sessions. They're really, sometimes, you know, I think a solo show can become a big old therapy session. These are ways to reveal who you are. And so you hear your voices in the character. So I think by being completely honest and being completely frank, you have to, I think that's the only way. So I think the challenges are, I mean, I think the thing that I always have to do after a show is sort of hug myself in a way, mm-hmm. you know, and put myself back together, but know that it's okay, that I needed to reveal myself so I can reveal someone else.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you will be out of New York for a little while this summer.
Yeah, I know. Hey, Amy, we never got a chance to tell everyone how you were in fact the one who told me that I was nominated for the GLAAD Award.
I know. I was the one who told you. I like woke up. I felt like your agent on Oscar day.
It was.
Coleman, you're nominated.
I was like, for what? <You're> like, and so, yeah, you were the one. You know, and as we know, I won the GLAAD Award for that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was and I didn't get a chance to go to the ceremony, but did I tell you my story? I have to tell you the story.
No, please tell me about the GLAAD Awards. Now, you were presented your award in New York.
Yes, in New York.
Okay, because there's different ones.
Right. So I couldn't go to the awards because I was performing in the Scottsboro Boys off Broadway, and I don't have an understudy. So picture it. I'm leaving my show. I go to the train. I'm coming up out of the train off of 42nd Street stop. And who do I see coming downstairs with a GLAAD Award? And by the way, it's torrential rain.
Uh-huh.
Coming downstairs is Jeffrey Knopfs, who is nominated for his show next fall.
Yeah, which I am dying to see. I got to get to New York.
Yes, you got to get here and see it. So I see him and I say, oh, Jeffrey. And he turns around and looks at me. He doesn't know me from Adam. And he says, yes. And I say, oh, I wanted to say, my name's Coleman Domingo, and our shows were nominated in the same category. And apparently you won. So I wanted to say congratulations to you. He said, oh, thank you so much. He was holding his beautiful GLAAD Award with the wings and everything. And he said, oh, but this isn't for my show. This is for Brothers and Sisters that I write for ABC. I said, oh, that's beautiful. Great. Well, congratulations. I said, well, who won for theater, for the, you know, our category? He said, I said, oh, it must have been Terrell McCraney, because he wins for everything. He, you know, brother, sister plays. And he said, no, actually, he said, a solo show. I said, a solo show? I said, Coleman Domingo? He said, no, no, not Coleman Domingo. A Boy and His... I said, A Boy and His Soul by Coleman Domingo? He said, yeah, Boy and His Soul by Coleman Domingo. I said, that's me. I'm A Boy and His Soul by Coleman Domingo.
Oh.
Said, how beautiful. Well, I'm so glad to be the one to tell you. So that's how I found out I won the GLAAD Award. You know?
You're constantly just tripping up on all your successes by others telling you about them.
Exactly. So apparently that's my thing. And apparently my thing is to not go to – I'm going to my first awards show this coming Sunday, and I'm a little nervous because usually I haven't been able to attend any award show of any award that I've ever won. The Obie Awards, Connecticut Critics Circle, Bay Area Theater Critics, you name it, and the GLAAD Award. I've never been able to attend because I've been working. And I always won those awards. Now I'm going to the Lortel Awards on Sunday for A Boy and a Soul because that was nominated. And I'm nervous that I might not win. Because well, I'm actually going.
You'll have to give us the update. Or somehow I need to watch the live feed so I can like text you while you won. Get out of your chair.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, I need to go to the bathroom like the moment they're announcing my category.
Yeah, so pull a Christine Lottie and just get up and get up to the bathroom or go to the bar.
With like toilet paper like hanging out from under my
head. That would be very funny, actually. I would love that. Oh, well, congratulations. I haven't gotten to congratulate you on the air about that. It's such a huge success. And we at the Queercast and at Windy City Media are so proud of you and just so glad to get to have you be a part of our family whenever you have a moment. So we'll probably be, I guess, podcasting from Minneapolis.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You're going to have to pop through Chicago, though. How are we going to make that happen?
We got to make it happen, though, because it's about time that we did that.
Yeah,
because we can videotape us doing this, too.
Exactly. Yeah. We could definitely do that. Coleman Domingo, everybody, check out his show. We'll have all the information linked in our show notes. Also, watch the Big Gay Sketch Show, and I'm sure you can go back on YouTube and watch the Wendy Williams if you want to see that appearance. But he is everywhere you want to be if you're a gay, Coleman Domingo. And when does the show start in Minneapolis?
It starts, I think, July 25th.
All right. Are you going to have any break from New York to that?
Yeah, I'm doing a workshop of a new musical for 2 weeks, and then I have a break for a month. So I'll be around for a month. So we can talk a couple times.
Yeah, we need to get you into Chicago,
maybe I can do a one night only of A Boy and His Soul in Chicago.
Let me figure that out. Or maybe you can also come judge Gay Idol one night while you're here.
I would love that. Let's set that up. Let's do it.
We're going to hook it up. We're going to hook it up, folks, while you guys enjoy the rest of your day. But we appreciate you listening to the Queercast. And definitely check out Sweet Tea, all the information for that show as well in our show notes. And we'll be back in our next show, where I am talking with Jake Heggie. He is the openly gay composer of the big new opera, Chicago Opera Theater's Three Decembers, based on the Terrence McNally novel that is getting so much attention, hot off his debut premiere of Moby Dick in Dallas. So he is taking the opera world by storm. So much love, everybody. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.
Okay, all right.